que voilà. So like I said, this was an exploratory research, so maybe I missed some bit here and there. But, yes. Yeah.
So thank you. How would you incorporate the lengthy bibliography at the end of the Manipulus Fulgens into your theory that it was intended perhaps for lay readership? How would that a layman gets this? One, it's in Latin, and oftentimes the prose is somewhat difficult to read. It's not as simple as other Latin texts. How do you imagine laymen accessing the Manipulus Fulgens? And again, do you imagine there were some copies later that were circulated without the appendix, without the appended bibliography? But sometimes the bibliography was copied and circulated by itself. Again, imagine the work as the whole, as Thomas conceived it, with that big bibliography. How does that work with the lay audience?
Well, first of all, as it goes for the easiness of the text, from what I've seen, I think it's Thomas d'Irlande made it a little bit easier than the original in most part. So that's one thing. And at the beginning of the 14th century, I'm pretty sure laymen began to read Latin, at least to read Latin a little bit, maybe enough to be able to read some citation here and there. But the other thing, and I think it's maybe the most plausible thing, is that the preachers may have used the Manipulus Fulgens, but the objective of the preachers are the learning of the layman. So obviously, it has been mediated by the preachers, but I think the end of the receiving end of the instruction are the layman, and it makes a lot of sense. Especially what I'm studying in my thesis are mostly mystics, author and preachers, and most of the scholarship around them find that they use mostly 12th century author as their principal authority. But so I think the Manipulus Fulgens fits that pattern because it, the reference are mostly 12th century. And, it seems to me that it fits it. But as we just discussed, someone, I think he was supposed to be here or something. No, 2 years ago, he was supposed to, the guy that made the article on
Marcel, he's listening in.
All right, really? So that would be interesting because he says that the in the Lemma era, there are some recent scholastic debates integrated in the Lemma era. So, but that's the very question about the transmission of the 12th century knowledge to the 14th century. What do they do with what's going on in the 13th century? The people in the 14th century are aware of all those developments, but the scholarship still think that the biggest reference are from the 12th century. So how is it integrated? Because it must be somewhere. But like I said, it's an exploratory essay that I've done. So I haven't found anything remotely related to what's going on about emotions in the 13th century. But I guess in-depth analysis would maybe find something that's the question, actually. Yes.
It was interesting because I think Chris argued that the audience was for the students.
Yeah.
The students, but you kind of now claim it's more for the lay people in general, the public. Do you have different lines of evidence that would distinguish those two, or what are you basing that on?
Yeah, but I think we should not distinguish too much.
Okay.
that's the thing. Because it can, we found so many manuscripts of the Manipulus Fulgens. It must have been used by a lot of people. So those people can be preachers. And preachers are not are not necessarily a school person. They have been to the schools. They have maybe a master degree or but most of the preachers that I'm working on, I've been to university, but I have quit, you know, two or three years after. So they have a knowledge of what's going on in the school, but they have not been to the end of it. So, yeah, so maybe those guys have used any floor religion, maybe not the Manipulus floor, but another one. So I think we should not too much distinguish, and you can be a student or you can be only a lay person that have some interest some here or there. But because to go into school, you have to be a cleric. You have the status at least of a cleric. So maybe the layman would be interested, but not by going to school. He's a student, but not a student in school. So I think our distinctions are quite modern. So maybe we have to be careful.
Dual purpose or something.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So, but I don't remember, but I've read an article saying that it's the public of the Manipulus Forum is way larger than we first thought. So, and I think that has to do with the fact that we distinguish too much categories, and sometimes maybe people are just interested in their religiosity, so they are looking at the tools to help them progress spiritually. So if they are students, laymen, or preachers, they have all the same, you know, objective, and they have the same tool, but don't distinguish themselves the same way we do.
Yeah, if I could jump in. I think my thinking about Thomas's intention, his intended audience, is that the way to think about it is that it's perhaps not a preaching collection so much as a pastoral collection.
Yeah, pastoral.
That is, and it's geared toward preaching. It's also confession. It's teaching the laity in a variety of ways through pastoral care. But I don't think it was I still believe that it was not intended specifically as a preaching collection. And there are some forthcoming works that I referenced that I think align with that. But at the same time, it was very popular with preachers. I mean, mm-hmm. Rouse has found three Artes Predicandi, which cite it specifically as a great source for writing sermons. The way that I came to the medical forum in the first place was that I determined that a preacher at the Council of Constance used it in composing eulogies in particular. And so there's no doubt that it's being... the dissemination of this material to the laity and to other clergy in a conciliar setting, in my case, is the ultimate audience.
Mm-hmm.
But the proximate, immediate audience, I think, is the academic milieu of students who are moving through this. And the catalog of Sorbonne books at the end, the admonition to don't... warm yourself with sparks when the fire is there. Don't be satisfied with a droplet when the fountain is there.
Mm-hmm.
Is also aimed at those students. But there is a broader world here, and I think we can overdraw the distinction between this audience and that audience. It's really all of those prospective audiences.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that the preacher was probably the main user of the probably, but it's just that we should not underestimate the capacity of the laity to actually read Latin, and it's just the thing is it's hard to prove, so that we can just suppose, but it's hard to
really. You look at provenance of manuscripts. And
it's true.
They tend to be in academic and monastic places of production and consumption. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back through. The Rosses did a great job of tracking
documents.
And that's, in fact, how I came up. Richard Fleming owned a copy that he took to Constance and wrote sermons with. So it's great when that falls together. But I think there are some lay owners that we can find there.
Mm-hmm.
But
just a very small question. I put myself while trying to put together the material for my own paper. Having worked more with encyclopedias than with florilegia, my impression is that the problem is not just while excluding the open or kind of text or type of content or it's not just why I do it with reference to the aim of the work or to the readers, but also because, but again, it's pure speculation, how difficult it is in with respect to how difficult it is to sum up some controversial issues. So it's easy to, I express myself in a very simple way. It's easier to summarize or to extract from Bernard of Clairvaux, because you can't follow a pattern. There is already an established tradition that leads you to the key points in Bernard of Clairvaux, so you can easily follow that and say, okay, maybe it's not extremely original, I repeat, but I'm on a sure ground. But if you try to summarize something which is a scholastic debate, or something which is going on in a scholastic debate, then you're on a shaky ground, you don't have established authorities, and it's much more difficult to try to extract the right passages and the sequence of passages your reader can follow. I don't know if I'm expressing myself clearly enough. Again, my beloved Vincent of Beauvais is a very beloved, in ironical sense, is a very good example for that, because if you go to from the books on zoology, on plants or precious stones, where you have the established authorities in natural history or etymologies or dictionaries or medicine and whatever you want, you move to the anthropological sections. Then you see how the methodologies, Vincent's methodologies, changes, and how difficult it is for him to summarize those issues like senses, internal senses, common sense, intellect, or all these thorny issues which has to be explained in a way or the other. So this is the first point. Secondly is, why do, put it in a very provocative way, why do we expect from Thomas of Ireland to summarize those kind of things where you can have different tools, and again, the Sorbonne Library has a lot of examples for that, which can integrate or which can substitute Thomas of Ireland, even for a preacher. It's I have the feeling that it's more for the 14th century that you have some kind of conflating between different kinds of texts, but and you have mixed forms of tools which are supposed to be, for instance, preachers' encyclopedias, like John of Saint Gimignan, for instance, which are supposed to be preachers' encyclopedias or preachers' tools, but are much more than that. But in the 13th centuries, you can have different kinds of texts, so to say, building a library with different tools. So this is pure speculation, but I don't know if it might play a role. But these two aspects.
I totally agree with the especially the first point. I think that the basic of having a sure ground on which to found your the writing. I think it's linked with the genre of the Fleurier-Jung. Yeah. They don't want to speculate in that, I am pretty sure you should not. For, like you say, philosophical reason, just to how to explain it in a proper way. But I think too, and I don't know if you have brought this up in one of your articles, but that some political issues too, because after 1270, it's quite tricky just to integrate the, especially when you're talking about intellect. Maybe you should just calm down a little bit and just keep it. So that, I think it has to do a little bit with politics. And yeah, but I didn't want to venture into that because it's speculative. But there's, I'm pretty sure that there's something to do with it. Yeah.
I want to surprise you. That will lay behind it.
Yeah.
it's a conservative collection.
Yeah.
Right. I was wondering along those lines too. You mentioned Bernard. We have Peter Bois and John of Salisbury as well from the 12th century. Mm-hmm. Are they? I can't remember if they show up in the.
Pierre de Blois. I've seen him pop up, but John of Salisbury. I think he has only one a quotation, right?
No, there are many.
Many? Okay.
Well, there are many.
I've seen one then, but not about emotions. It was about something else. But from 12th century, there's one that has come up, Conrad of Hirso. But is he from the 12th century? I don't know. Yeah.
Early.
So there are some modern author, but they are all from the 12th century. I haven't seen anyone from the 13th century, but because but that I couldn't explain it.
Moreover, Conrad von Hirsau was an author used in schools.
Yeah.
So it depends on the quotation, but I have some different. Mm.
But Conrad von Hirsau was quite interesting. I didn't integrate it, but because I didn't know how to explain it. But he names the emotion inclinatio mentis. So. Which is different, but it's something that we can see in other texts. Inclinatio voluntatis, inclinatio mentis. It's related to affectivity, but I didn't know how to put it in my paper, but it was interesting. Yeah.
Do you ever see Thomas as an editor intervening and changing the word from the original? So Bernard has. Affectus, or one of the fathers have passio, and does he ever come in and substitute a synonym or something? Do you ever see him changing the text with these keywords? Is what I'm asking.
No, I haven't seen any. That's why I haven't put any focus on that, because of all the extract that I've been reading, it was mostly the same thing. There were some word change here and there, but nothing major. So as I had to tell, the thing is. Yes.
Well, so I wonder if there aren't if there isn't an editorial agency to kind of arrange a more traditional choice of words. Is it really a choice, or is it more a choice of authors?
Yeah, but I think the editorial effect is more in the construction of each lemma. So if Senec is used for example. We know at first Senec has a negative perception of affectus, but placed within a lemma, a structured lemma, then it doesn't have that negative connotation, because the way it fits, it plays on the ambiguity of the word. So even if we know that Senec, the author, had a negative perception, Senec, the author used by Thomas of Ireland, may seem to have a positive view of it. So that would be the editorial thing. Yeah. Yeah.
May I ask a
sure, sure.
small question? have you try to search for, or maybe it's not even worth the problem because it would take too much, but... have you tried to see if you can find at least a part of the sequence used by Thomas of Ireland in a sermon or in an Aspericante? I try to explain what I'm heading to, because speaking of agency, what the colleague is just about to say, it's not just it would be eventually interesting to see what... Thomas of Ireland put an offer, so to say, but how people reused it, mm-hmm. if they did. Because then you can see how from this heritage or how much from this offer was really used, in which order, which sequence, mm-hmm. And in which way. I was trying to read in a very... sadly neglected sources, because it's a pretty impossible lecture. It's good for sleepless nights.
Yeah.
Is Johannes Bromjart.
Johannes
Bromjart. Di Summa Predicata.
Okay.
It's an awful text. It's really, it's a collection for preachers where concepts, ideas are explained in a pretty scholastic way with additions of some sources. And what I was asking myself, but I gave up searching because it would be too much for me, was see if I could find in the same lemmas used by Johannes Bromjart some of the passages or some of the excerpts offered by Thomas of Ireland.
Mm.
If it's not Johannes Bromjart, maybe somebody else. But if have you tried or have you considered to do that?
Yeah, that
would be terrible.
Yeah, but that would be interesting. But I think that there's a Christine Boyer, which made an article,
yes,
that she found some, extract,
yes,
from the Manipulus Forum in a,
yes,
in a Dominican preacher.
Yeah.
So I guess that's that. as for me, well, yeah, obviously that would be interesting. That would be interesting. And I'll probably do something like that in my thesis anyhow, because I will need to find where does the preacher find his sources, his influence. So yeah, I guess. But like you said at first, it's the Manipulus Florum are disseminating a knowledge that has been, you know, digested, and it's, you know, everyone knows that basically. So sometimes maybe we think that the author has found that idea directly in the in Bernard de Clairvaux, for instance, but in the end he just found it in the nearby Floridium. So I think they are quite more used than we thought, and like we discussed just earlier, a lot of in the Middle Ages they didn't have the full body of a text. They had most of the time they have only some things here and there. So well, what is the point of the Floridium? Because they didn't need to find the old text. They just had some basic things which are quite understandable, explicative, you know, powerfully explicative, I would say. So that's probably the main tool for, you know, people wanting to learn something. And just another thing, it just has come up, so that's what I'm saying, about the preaching things, is that Thomas of Ireland, he's not a mendicant, right? No, so that's another thing that made me lean towards the fact that it can be directed to maybe some more lighty than preaching, because I don't know, the preachers are mostly mendicants, so I don't. The difference, I don't know if it makes sense, but that's more feeling than anything. But the fact that he wasn't a brother of some sort, I think it has to do with the public of the Manipulus Florum, which would be more general than, but I don't know, it's just something that I'm drawing.
Do we know, maybe Christian answers, do we know what Thomas Ireland did? After he went to the University of Paris, did he leave there and do something else? Or
well, he left his books to the library. His obituary is recorded there, so no.
Oh, okay.
As far as we know.
Okay.
He may have made side trips, who knows. But
okay.
There isn't a lot, but the Rouses have put to bed the traditions that he was either a Franciscan or a Dominican. The problem is there are a lot of Thomases from Ireland who are...
Yeah.
In fact, one of those is the school of Aquinas.
Yeah.
So they were able to separate those out and say, no, there's the evidence suggests a secular priest.
Mm-hmm.